Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Network. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Hello, everyone. This is the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. I'm so excited about today's show. My guest is Egyptian life coach Shahinaz El-Hinawe. I'm your host, Jan Jaffe. Welcome to In Depth. Shahinaz El-Hinawe is founder of Shams Women Project and a co-active coach from the Coaches Training Institute in the USA. With a BA in psychology, an MA in gender and peace building from the University for Peace, a UN-affiliated university in Costa Rica, Shahinaz has more than 10 years of experience in the field of women and peace in the Middle East, Asia, and USA, and is a current researcher on women's consciousness in psycho-spiritual studies. She holds workshops and women's circles on self-discovery, living a life of purpose, and moon women cycles. Shahinaz is also a nonviolent communication Arabic facilitator for the New York Center for Nonviolent Communication. I'm so excited to have Shahinaz El-Hinawe as my guest on today's show. Welcome, Shahinaz.
Thank you very much, Dean. I really appreciate this opportunity. I'd like to really thank you for giving me this opportunity being with you today. I'm really excited and hopeful and looking forward to our conversation. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, too, and I'm excited as well. The number here is 646-716-9397. We welcome your calls, questions, comments, and contribution to the discussion. We love your participation. So the number again is 646-716-9397. So, Shahinaz, first of all, I just want to say what a treat it is to have you here on the show today as a guest. Now, you have such an interesting and inspiring story, so I wonder if you would mind sharing it in any way that you would like with our listening audience.
Yes, sure, Dean, I would love to. Actually, sharing my story has become really something very important to me because I feel that coming from this background, coming from this story, it really explains my life purpose and why am I here. So I would start from the very beginning when I was like a child, young girl. As you said, I'm coming from Egypt, from an Muslim Arabic, and I consider myself to be like a very privileged girl. You know, like my parents were so kind to me. Everything I asked for, I would get. I would have. I had an opportunity to travel, to do several things. I had a lot of freedom, a lot of, you know, like everything I asked for, really, I got. And that's really considered a privilege from different, even like my colleagues at school, you know. So I would always see myself as having a lot of opportunities. However, growing up, I felt that something was not met in my life. Like, as I said, I was, you know, getting everything I wanted. But I had all the feeling that something was missing, like kind of care and love that was missing in my life. And I started really searching for that. And that took me, like, outside home. So I started, you know, like, friends and colleagues, boys and girls, I started getting into relationships just to get this kind of care and love that I needed. And that, you know, brought me into a lot of abusive relationships. And I had, like, I lived in the victim role for a long time. I'm not saying that my parents did anything wrong or anything was, you know, like, it's just that this lack of something that I really didn't know where did it come from. And growing up with this ended really in putting myself in an abusive marriage. And then I realized that I was the one who did this to myself. I was, you know, like, responsible for this, because I always had a choice. I always had an opportunity to learn more. And I'm not blaming myself. I'm not, you know, having any soft skills, but just learning from the process. And I got the opportunity to know and to, you know, like, to discover my power, to discover my inner power, to discover my inner life, and get out of this cycle, you know, like self, I would say it's a self-abusive cycle. And so I got out of this marriage, and I started really discovering who am I, what's my life purpose, and I started traveling and going around the world, meeting people, studying and working abroad. I studied gender and peace building, and I felt like it is my purpose is to help women, you know, like to stand up against violence, like starting from self-violence, self-abuse, to any violence that would be conflicted towards them. So I started studying that, working on that, with the aim to assist women and help them. Until I started my initiative, Shams Women, as you said. It's an initiative to bring women together from all over the world to get to know themselves and understand their life purpose, working together and helping each other in solidarity, and you know, like, trying to bring peace within as a start, until, you know, like, peace in the world. So,
Oh, well, that's quite a life story. Thank you so much for being so open and honest about all that you've experienced. So I'm curious, what would you say was, because you've talked about, you know, how there was a turning point for you, some people call it an inflection point. So I'm wondering what you would say was the catalyst for that in your life.
Okay, so how it happened, I really remember very well, because, you know, as I said, I was kind of like in the darkness. I was kind of like blind to myself and to knowing myself. I was just in this abusive circle. And then at this one point of time, I turned to God. I turned to God and I asked him, you know, is this, especially coming from this culture where I am, is this how you wanted me to be? Is this how you wanted me as a Muslim, Arab woman, and, you know, Egyptian, to be treated this way, to be in this abusive marriage, to be in this, you know, self-destructing behaviors? Or is there more than that? So when I...
Hello?
Hello, sorry.
There you are. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We lost you for a moment.
Yeah, sorry. When I really sincerely did that and turned to God, I really got an answer. I got an answer, and I felt that I was guided. I felt I was guided to the light, and I felt I was guided to the sources that helped me understand that I am really so precious, and especially as a woman, in the eyes of God. You know, like, I'm really... so precious. I really need to know, you know, my self-worth in the eyes of God. And when I started studying that, getting more into that, that was really, you know, the turning or shift in my life, that I felt, oh, now that I know it, I really need to show women and to show the world how this is it. So, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. That's, I mean, you really, it's almost like the, you know, when people talk about hitting bottom and then, you know, being opened up or looking to God for an answer. And that kind of was, you went through a lot to come to that place where you were able to create that shift. So you talked about your career, that you started out with gender and as a gender and peace building consultant. So what made you change from that, working on countering violence against women, to the current work that you do with women?
Okay, yes, that was another big shift in my life. As I said, I started becoming interested in violence against women. I worked with women subjected to violence, a lot of work on sexual harassment. And again, another point, I was so, you know, sincere, and I asked God, like, God, please put me in a situation where women are really subjected to violence, where I can go and serve. And a few weeks later, I got an offer to go to Afghanistan and work with women on violence against women. And I was so happy and excited, and I went there. But then there, when I really saw a lot of violence, a lot of hatred, a lot of, a lot of anger. And I must say that I was surprised, because there are so many powerful women working there, you know, like, they really don't need much experts. They are very powerful, and they're doing a great job. But for me, I really got kind of drained, and I felt that I don't want to be doing this anymore. I want to make a shift in my life. I want to work on love. I want to work on compassion. I want to work with women to have self-love, to understand themselves, to do what's necessary to protect them from violence. I'm not saying that all violence is because lack of self-love, although a big part of it is, but this is where I found myself fitting in. So I had a shift, and there I remember very well, sitting there, writing my proposal, you know, like application for a fellowship in New York, that I want to shift my career and go to the United States to learn about life coaching, life skills, self-help, and start learning more about how to work with people on these issues. So I kind of like shift. I wanted to a big shift of energy from working on violence every day and street harassment, sexual harassment, to love and compassion and harmony and that. So, yeah.
Wow. So what it sounds like, or what I hear, is that you feel as though, as you mentioned, being in the victim mode when in your marriage, in your first marriage, and that was not just something that was just happening to you, but that, in a sense, self-love helps women at least be able to shift out of victim mode. It may not in itself be something that can change violence against women, but it can help women step out of that victim mode and perhaps take action in their lives so that they are no longer in that situation. Is that correct?
Yes, and a step before that, which is when they have the self-love, the self-confidence, understand themselves, they would kind of like protect themselves from getting into that victim mode, from getting into that violence from the very first place. So I wanted to go further back and not wait till violence happened and deal with it, but to build a shield, to build a protection around us, that we are there, we will not allow it to happen from the very beginning. We will stand up before it happens.
Excellent. Do you know, I mean, there's differences, obviously, in the cultures, and we'll get into that, but I was just thinking, so much of what you're talking about reminds me of the feminist movement that had begun in this country really in the 1970s. And, you know, so many of us in America take it for granted, although there still are, you know, there's still a long way for it to go. I mean, there's still so much, inequality, at least in this country, in the United States, when it comes to men and women, when it comes to pay and, you know, that sort of thing. I won't go into all of that, but I'm wondering, I mean, I'm not really aware, and I would think I don't think I'm alone in this. I think a lot of our American listeners might be in the same boat as I am when it comes to knowing whether or not there even has been a feminist movement in Egypt or in the Arab countries. I know they vary very much. You can't put them all in one basket. But is that something that is ongoing or has begun in Egypt, a feminist movement?
Yes, of course. From the very early on, the beginning of this century, from the beginning of I just remember now, there was a revolution in the 1919, and the women were there, you know, next to the men, and the women, they were even kind of like, there's a very famous incident of women coming together. They had kind of like a cover, or you know, a veil or a cover on their faces, and then they took it off, and they, you know, they said, you know, we are, you know, like, this is the movement. We're you know, we're freeing ourselves. This was a symbol. It's not really in itself just taking this off their faces, the cover off their faces, but it was like a symbol, you know, that they are present, they are powerful. And, yeah, you know, like, they started with education rights and, you know, like voting rights and all that. That was, like, really early on. Of course, yeah, there's a big movement.
Okay, so, I mean, I'm showing my ignorance, but...
No, of course not.
But I know there are differences, which, again, we'll get into this a little later in the interview. So you mentioned your fellowship in New York, and, of course, that's how you and I met during your fellowship in New York, which was wonderful. I'm so grateful to have met you. But I'm curious if you would... tell us, something about the fellowship and how your journey on this trip, your spiritual and educational and all that wonderful stuff, how that journey impacted your life and your purpose.
Well, that was really a beautiful journey because it was full of talent. And, I mean, it's really interesting, and it has a lot of, you know, funny stories in it as well, because I remember very much, again, when I was sitting there in Afghanistan writing this application for fellowship, I said, I really need to shift the career. I really want to go to the United States because I want to, you know, like, kind of work with Louise Hay, Wayne Dyer, you know, all these lovely people, and just try to learn that energy away from, you know, violence and harassment. And I asked God again, like, God, please, I want to go to a place where it's, like, really laid back, you know, like somewhere in California on the beach or Florida or something like that. You know, Wayne Dyer lives in Hawaii, so I want to go and be there and learn how to relax and meditate and all these beautiful things. And I said, oh, God, please, not New York. But then this time... I got
laid
really
back in New York, don't...
Yes.
The two don't fit in the same sentence.
I visited New York in 1994 for Thanksgiving, and I was really, you know, I come from Alexandria, Egypt, which is like a little city on the beach, and we're so, you know, like, relaxed, laid back. And so I went to New York, I just felt, oh my God, you know, like, all these big buildings and all this quick people running, and, you know, So when I did the fellowship, I was like, oh, God, please, not New York. I really want to relax after Afghanistan, you know, like, I need to relax. And then the next thing I know, it was New York, and it was a fellowship with an organization I'm sure a lot of you are aware of, Hola Back, and it's working on anti-street harassment. So it's like, oh, my God, so street harassment, sexual harassment again, and New York, that's too much for me. And I called, you know, the organizers of the program, and I said, oh, please, I want to change. They said, you cannot change, neither the city nor the organization. Either you take it or not. And I was so confused because I turned a lot of, you know, opportunities, and I was like, I really need to go there. And I said, okay, I'll take the challenge. I'll go there and try my best and try to do things on my own. And actually what it turned out was that it was the best thing that ever happened to my life. It was just my perspective, you know, like, we can always be scared of things or have this perception of things. It's going to be bad, you know, it's going to be a horror movie. But then when we really be open. I became open, and I decided to take the opportunity and see what's the best I can get out of it, and what are the opportunities there. So I went there, I talked with my boss, and I was like, I really need to learn other things than street harassment. And they were like, this is your experience, we need you to serve. I'm like, I would like to serve from my experience, but at the same time, I would like to learn from you, you know, like new things. So I made an agreement, I worked extra hours, and I took a few days off to go study coaching. So that was, you know, like a very good compromise and agreement. And then regarding New York, like really it was the best city I could have ever, you know, like I couldn't have learned that much from any other city because everything happens in New York. I was like daily in events, daily in workshops, daily in, you know, getting to know people. Everything I ever wanted, you know, people to meet, they would come to New York. So I did everything. I got to know Tom Bond from the New York Center for Nonviolent Communication. I got to know you in that workshop. So, I mean, till now, you know, like my relationships in New York has been amazing. I'm working with the New York Center for Nonviolent Communication. I took their program and I'm doing it in Arabic. So, I mean, a lot of opportunities happened to me there. And I have just a little final story. It's a bit funny, but I think it's very spiritual for me. The most thing I ever hated in my life was cockroaches, and I was so scared of them. And in New York, I'm sure you all know that it is very hard to find a place to live for only 4 months. And I was going crazy trying to find a place to stay in, and I couldn't. At the very last minute, the only place I could stay was with a single mother, and she has, you know, like a little girl child, and she wasn't really living in a very good situation. It was in Brooklyn, and there were cockroaches in the place where I stayed, and I was like, oh my god, this is a big challenge, and the only thing that I really I'm phobic of. And after a while, I really had I overcome this fear, you know. I really had peace with cockroaches, which was like really amazing for me. And this is why I'm saying it's very spiritual, because like the thing that you really feel you cannot live with, you can hate, but then you can make peace. Like one day I remember going into the bathroom and just screaming when I saw the cockroach, and the cockroach was like, you know, ran away. And I'm sure if I was him, I was like, oh, what's this crazy woman screaming at me? I'm so afraid. And I looked at him and I was like, you're so afraid, and I'm so afraid, but I'm scaring you, you know. So it's the perception of just being afraid of something. It might be afraid of us as well. So I just had peace with them, and I said, you know, I don't want to harm you. You don't harm me, and we'll live okay, you know. And, I mean, after that, like, just 2 or 3 weeks, I changed. I found another place to live in, and I was really happy. So I mean, I learned, and I saw a lot of things that I really appreciated by being there with all the things I have seen, all the experiences. So it was really a great opportunity. And the last week, I met my current husband, who was Egyptian, who lived in New York for 20 years. So now I am living, you know, with a New Yorker. He's very fast for me still. But, I mean, we get along and everything as well. So, yes, it was the best thing that ever happened to my life.
Oh, what wonderful stories. I mean, I love your stories about the cockroach. You know, you've never shared that with me before. But what is so funny, I mean, talk about finding the opportunities in a challenge. You did. You turned it into this whole spiritual transformation for you, and also how you just in what you were talking about, so much of what NVC or nonviolent communication is about, which is empathy. And, you know, seeing things from another point of view, and at its most basic level, it's about how to get along, you know, and peace building. So it's, you know, so you developed a way of living in peace with what was your enemy, this little cockroach. You know, basically, you and the cockroach were enemies of each other, and you understood then how to get along and seeing life from the eyes of this cockroach, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I love that story. Thank you. You know, in our previous conversations, you have mentioned Sufism. And so I would love if you would tell us a bit about that, how you got involved with it, and how it has affected this journey you've been on.
Okay. Sufism, my master or my spiritual teacher defines it as a living tradition that really is applicable to all ages and all cultures, and it is a religion of love. I first got to know about Sufism, you know, like 6 years ago or something, and I experienced different culture that, you know, like practice Sufism. And then I got to know about Rumi, the very famous Sufi poet, and Shams Tabriz. And by the way, Shams Woman, my organization, is named after Shams, because I'm so inspired with him. And Shams was all about, you know, love and getting to know yourself. So I define Sufism as a practice of love, a practice of openness, a practice of humanity, you know, like just coming together as humanity, as human beings, knowing each other and knowing yourself and knowing the light within. Another thing that really was great that it happened to me is that I was so confused. I had something like inspiration overload. And when I went to New York, I kept on going to different places, different meetings, different rituals, until I ended at a retreat with a group called the Threshold Society, who are originally from the U.S., and they follow the Mawlawi order, which is Rumi, Gladdin. Rumi is order. And I met them again in New York. So I went to this retreat in New York, and I became part of them. They are the Mawlawi group who does the whirling. The whirling is one of their, you know, like traditions or rituals. And again, it is about attention, like having attention all the time and be present, you know, like all the time, just being present in yourself, being present with others, being present with God within you. And we have certain practices that we do. You know, like gathering is very important. So we gather every, you know, like weeks or couple of weeks. We do practices of, as I said, knowing ourselves, working with our ego. And what I love about my, you know, group or tradition is that we don't say kill your ego. We say befriend your ego. So it's like knowing your ego and becoming friends with your ego. It's not like really a bad thing to go away from it, but to befriend it and to understand that. And working on all the qualities like love and compassion and peace and purifying your heart with all these qualities. At the same time, working to understand all what we call them as heart diseases is, you know, like greed, hatred, you know, like jealousy, all that, to work with them, to try to understand where they're coming from and try to really let go of these things. So for me, this is Sufism. It's continuous development of the self and doing it together in a group to support each other, because sometimes when you do these things alone, you need support. So that's what the gathering is all about.
Oh, wonderful. You know, I'm just going to take a moment here. First of all, I see we have a caller, so I'm going to get to the caller in just a moment. But before that, I want to take a moment to mention our sponsor here on the Life Coach Radio Networks. We're proud to have as our sponsor Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the Internet, offering customers a new way to enhance and enrich their lives every day. Audible is the preeminent provider of spoken word audio products that includes more than 100,000 audio programs from more than 1,800 content providers. Receive a free audiobook with your 30-day trial when you sign up with Audible today at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com audible.com/lifecoachradio. Now, here are some Audible books related to today's topic. The Science of Enlightenment, written and narrated by Shinzen Young. Excellent Daughters, The Secret Lives of Young Women Who Are Transforming the Arab World, written and narrated by Catherine Zoepf, Z-O-E-P-F. And Nonviolent Communication, Create Your Life, Your Relationships, and Your World in Harmony with Your Values, written and narrated by Marshall Rosenberg. So don't forget to sign up for a one-month free trial to get your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. Audible.com, making listening a tool for life. And now, back to our show. So if you haven't been with us before, welcome to part two of my interview with Shahinez El-Hanawi on In Depth with Jan Jaffe. So you've been talking about Sufism and how it basically, if I can sum up what I heard you mention, was that it was really about being present all the time to everything around you. It's a kind of constant awareness, and at the same time a true authenticity about accepting yourself while accept and always being open and learning about everything around you without judgment, but with love. Is that sum it up a little bit?
Yes, and also the importance of having a group, the importance of connecting with others, with humanity, with being in a group to support you and help you, and also you know, some rituals like daily practices that you need to do to keep you, mm-hmm. like to build you, be in this presence, you know, I would call it like when you go to the gym, you know, for bodybuilding, to build your muscles and be stronger.
Right.
There are spiritual practices just to be, you know, like keeping your level and being stronger on the spiritual path.
Oh, wonderful. I will, but we did, our caller dropped, so if our caller wants to call back in, your number ends in 1249. We would love to take your call. Otherwise, anyone who wants to call in with a question or a comment, we would love to hear from you. The number here is 646-716-9397. So, Shahinez, I'm wondering, what do you believe might be the most common challenges that your clients face, and how might you deal with those challenges?
Okay, so again, what brought me in this field is the feeling and the knowing that we all, you know, like are mirrors to each other. We all face the same things. We all have the same issues. And with the clients that have been working since I came back from the United States, main issues are, again, you know, like the self-love, the being in the victim role, a lot of family issues, because here in my culture, like we live with our families at the same home until we get married. So this is a common challenge, you know, like searching for independence, searching for freedom, mm-hmm. you know, a space, and that same pattern of low self-worth, you know, like feeling guilt and shame and not being able to express that. And another issue also is sexuality, you know, education. This topic is a bit of a taboo in our culture, you know, like there's no enough sufficient education on sexuality, on sexual expression, on you know, like living in our sexuality. So these mm-hmm. are the common issues, yeah.
Ah, okay, and that's one of the main differences. Not one of the main, but that is a big difference between Eastern and Western, I guess, feminism, because there is so much of a woman's sexuality has often been a challenge, shall we say, with, you know, for men. They feel that it's a power that women have, and that's one of the, I would say, that's a tremendous difference. You know, again, I'm a Western woman, so having never lived in the East, I can, you know, these are just assumptions I'm making. So, but I know the, you know, the whole sexual revolution that happened in this country, and I guess in the West for women. And so I'm wondering, when it comes to the differences between Eastern and Western women, what patterns or traditions would you say that you've seen and that you admire in Western women that you would like to share with women from your culture and vice versa?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so some of the difference, as I said, is the idea of living with your family until you get married. This is a bit of a challenge of women in my culture because, like, a lot of women want to be independent, want to move from living with their families, and they just get married to anyone just to go out of the family. This is the reason for just, you know, getting into any marriage. Being with family, there is, you know, pros and cons for everything. It's a lot of support. You know, like here, when I started telling my story to Western women, they were like, oh my God, you're so spoiled, because here the family takes care, you know, if for the boy and the girl as the same, you know, like woman and man, financially and, you know, emotionally and like everything. So really, we don't really have issues of being, you know, like worried about paying the bill if we leave this job, if we want to pay the rent or anything like that. And this is something also, yeah, like I see in coaching different women in Western and Eastern. But here it's like you can really, you know, just don't really worry about it. You know that your family will take care of you. And another thing is, I like very much and I admire in Western women is that that kind of independence compared, you know, like at the end there's a lot of commonalities, but kind of like independence, kind of you know, more freedom than we have, you know, like freedom of expression, freedom of just saying this is my life, I can do, you know, whatever I want, especially to your parents or even to your partner. But here there's a lot of culture and traditions that I can't speak up, I can't say this, I can't just leave the house and go, you know, like there's lots of, you know, issues on that. Other things would be like, you know, sports. That's one thing that I really love in the Western culture is that sports is very common. I mean, for men and women as well, but sports, especially for women here, it's very... You know, it's very, it's not very popular. You know, you see a lot of men going to the gym and doing sports, but, you know, like most of the women that even, especially my clients, that they, sports is not something really important in their life. Again, here in my culture, there's a lot of kind of unity, collective, you know, like the thing, the idea of the extended family, you know, like you always, when you go to someone, you always have their cousins and cousins of cousins and you know, this kind of women coming together. It's always this culture of coming together. It's not that it's not in the West. Of course, there's gathering and family and everything, but the family here and these gatherings are very, very, you know, tight and very important. One thing I like very much in the United Kingdom, when I visited for a while, is there are programs for mothers and children. Like I used to take my daughter when she was little and go to a different kind of programs, you know, dancing and doing a lot of activities together, you know, like, you know, working with mothers and teaching them how to deal with children. Here, when I came back, it was really an issue, you know, like it's very rare. You can hardly find any program for mothers and children together. It's either a nursery, you leave the child and go, but you really don't get to have this connection of mother and child. And generally there's, I mean, I know that the feminist movement is everywhere, the patriarchal, you know, thoughts and societies everywhere, but again, it's a bit overwhelming in my culture, I must say.
Wow.
Some traditions that I really love here sharing when we get a lot of visitors from Western countries. Actually, I have a room in my apartment that's especially for visitors, and at the point of time, I had like every month a Western lady here, and we do a lot of, you know, like women gathering of belly dancing, you know, like drawing on our skin, which is like henna and stuff like that. They're really nice traditions that when the Western women come here, they really enjoy very much. So, yeah.
Oh, that sounds fun. I'll book my trip.
Yeah. You're welcome.
No, but what you bring up is really important, saying that, you know, in the East, it's like, you know, the family and community is very, very strong. And it's true. That's something that's a price that we often pay here in the West for our, you know, our freedom, our independence. As women, we do, you know, we do lose some of that sense of community and family, but at the same time, there is a price for that, too, for the family and community. And it's, you know, as you described it, it sounds a little bit like, you know, as though you're owned a bit and you have a very strict set of rules placed upon you. So as you seem to say, there was pros and cons to both. Yeah, there's prices you pay for either that freedom that we have in the West or the safety and security that you have in the East, that family and that community that is so much a part of your life. So there are prices to pay on both sides. So, you know, you've talked about different challenges or differences between Western and Arab women, and I'm curious about what the different challenges are in coaching Western versus Arab women, or vice versa, Arab versus Western women.
Okay. First of all, again, I would like to say that there are a lot of commonalities. So in coaching in general, we do like general stuff like who are you, what's your life purpose, things that are really common for everyone. But the difference in coaching and the difference of challenges is that it is due to the culture, and it is due to the different traditions. Like, for example, clients from the West would, you know, look, would have issues of, you know, maybe women being lonely, you know, like children just, you know, want to live on their own, and maybe if her partner is not there. So there's a lot of loneliness. This we don't really, experience here, because it's always there is a cousin, there is a neighbor, there is a family member, there is, you know, so this is one of the difference in the challenges. Something like, again, as I said, financial issues here, it's really, it's very easy to find financial support, you know, like your uncle, your aunt, your, you know, a lot of that.
Mm.
Again, when I coach a woman from Western culture, it's really they're independent, especially if they're single mothers and they're suffering to they have to share, you know, taking care of the kids. And here in our culture, I mean, it's this tradition is that the father is responsible. I know that's not equality, but financially they're supposed to be, you know, like for the kids. It's not really the reality, but, you know, like culturally, traditionally it is. So, yeah, I mean, these are some of the examples that, you know, I face differently in the different cultures due to the different traditions and situations.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting, though, that you say it's the culture, but it's not always the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind just expanding a little bit on that? You just said.
Yes, sure. I mean, we are And that's really interesting. Thank you for asking these questions, because in our culture, religion is a big thing that people always talk with, you know, like, oh, religion says that, religion says that, we should follow religion and all that stuff. But then religion, I mean Islam and women in Islam, when I really got to know about that, I realized I was really surprised, because we have so much rights that men do not have the same rights as we have. Like, once the woman, you know, like, gets married, she is fully responsible financially of her husband. Just even if she works, even if she has money, it's for her own. She has no obligation whatsoever to pay a penny, you know, in the household. The man is responsible for paying everything for her, for the kids, for everything. But again, we don't follow this. As I said, reality is different. Almost a third of Egyptian families are, you know, like the caretakers are women, and a lot of men, they do not work. And the women take care of the family. And even, you know, if like 50%, we have 50% rate of divorce. And like, I would say, I don't know what percent exactly that women, that men do not pay for you know, their kids, but it's a big percentage. So culturally and religiously, it's, the man is responsible, but then the reality is not really like that. So
So in that sense, it's I guess it's become a little more westernized. that happens, I think, in so many cultures. You know, you have mentioned, briefly in a conversation we had in the past, something about 40 journeys of light. Can you quickly just elaborate a little on that?
Yes, actually, the 40 journeys of light is, I'm turning 40 in a few months, and this is an insight that came to me put all the 40 years of my life experience in a program for 40 days, starting for women, and then I think later on we would include men as well. And life is the theme that I've been getting for the whole last year. Whenever I hear, you know, something, I watch something, I get into a course, it's all about light, and the light of the divine, and the light we have inside. And then the 40 journeys of light is, as I said, it's my 40 years experience, and 40 days and 4 questions of Shams Tabriz, the spiritual companion and teacher of Rumi, who I also heard for the first time these questions in New York in the retreat. And he said, you really do not have to do anything in your life or just, you know, read books or study or, you know, all the knowledge that you need to have in your life are to be bound with 4 questions. The first is, who are you and what's your essence? The second is, why are you here and where you're going? The third is, where is your origin? And the fourth is, what I am currently involved in and towards what I must turn my face to. And when I first heard these questions from my spiritual teacher, he got really a little piece of paper out of his pocket and was like, I'm walking with these questions all the time. It's continuous consciousness of these questions. So the program is the 4 questions, every question for 10 days. And within these 10 days, we, you know, discuss many concepts like, you know, like qualities like love and compassion and peace, and also heart diseases, as I said earlier, from Tibetan, like jealousy, pride, you know, like gossip and stuff to do a lot with women as well. And the question, for example, who am I? We talk about the self, the soul, the heart, the body. So we really go into all these deep stuff. And it's being developed right now. Hopefully it will be launched by the fall to be an online course that would bring women from all over the world, in English language, of course. But my main aim is to bring women from the East and from the West to join this course online, to get to know each other through, you know, knowing themselves and knowing each other through these questions and experiencing these concepts and working together. Of course, not answering these questions in 40 days, but just, as Shem said, to bind with these questions, to live with these questions.
Oh, that's wonderful, because those four questions are, you know, those aren't, you can't just answer them 1, 2, 3. Those really require that you really search deep within yourself and do constant soul searching and awareness and self-awareness and really understanding what's around you and becoming more spiritual. So it really speaks to life purpose and being aware of, you know, getting out of a stuck place and moving you forward. I love that. It gets you into being rather than doing. That's great. Maybe you can send me those questions sometime or tell us where can we find that information.
Yes. Actually, the program, as I said, is being developed right now. The like a summary of the manual I would like to give for free because this is the creed of Shem Tabriz, and I'm inspired by him, and he was all about sharing love. But then the course, it will include some group coaching and, you know, individual coaching that would be for fees, of course. But I'll be very happy to share this manual, you know, like for free for anyone who would like to work on that. And I'm very happy that you, you know, like stress on the point that these questions are not answerable, you know, that quickly. It's actually, as I said, Shem said to bind with this question. He never said answer because it's, the idea of these questions is to live in conscious of these questions, not to answer them, because, like, you answer them every day, you know, it's something ongoing. But the program is an invitation to come and be conscious of all these things and then work on them for the rest of your life.
It's a process. It's, you know, as you said, it's not, you know, to just answer. It's a constant process of transformation, of spirituality, meaning, you know, that you grow constantly with this awareness, with this presence, with this love. And in order to love other people, as we know, and to connect, we have to have healthy love for ourselves, which means not narcissism. But when you were talking earlier about ego, it's that healthy ego as opposed to that damaged ego. So, you know, you have this beautiful 2-year-old daughter. And so I'm wondering, you know, with everything you know now, and that, you know, with the, all the transformation and the journeys that you've been on, that you're continuing to live your life, you know, in this journey, what counsel do you think you'll be giving your daughter as she grows up?
Actually, it's a very important question. It's a very tough question because I've been, you know, a lot of people, we have an Egyptian saying that the experts, you know, like a doctor, it's very hard for him to treat himself or herself, you know. This I've been, you know, in my mind before even giving my birth to my daughter. And what I realized, or what I, you know, like I thought of, or came in conclusion to, is that to be very aware, self-aware, that not to seek perfection, because a lot of the time, you know, like, I'll be like, I want to be the perfect mother. There's nothing called perfect mother, but just, I like the concept of good enough mother, and of course, I will use a lot of the things that I learned in my life, especially nonviolent communication, because nonviolent communication helps us to see the other's needs. So I'm searching now for her needs, for her feelings, helping her to express that. Watching myself of saying no, this is something I'm suffering with people around me and my mother and everything. They're like, you have to tell her no. And like, I really need to see why she's doing that. How can I find a substitute? How can I let her experience herself? How can I let her express herself, know herself, love herself? And of course, teaching her all these qualities about love and compassion and, you know, knowing yourself and the healthy ego, as you were just saying. And the most importantly is introducing God as the loving God, not the fearful God, because a lot of us, especially in my culture, you know, we got introduced that to be afraid of God. He punishes us. But, but you know, like what I love and learned in Spiz is that God is love. So when she starts knowing that we were created out of love, a loving God, and, you know, just sharing the love, and yeah, just being herself. So not making it an issue of, oh, I have to do that and I have to do that. Just letting her be and give her the space and give her the freedom to be herself.
Well, it sounds like, you know, it sounds as though with everything that you've said, the example that you set, you know, just by the way you live your life and everything that you do and all the work you do with transformation and constantly growing and how you treat other people and the love that shines from your eyes, you know, children are blank slates and they learn so much just from observing. So I would imagine that she's going to learn a lot just from being your daughter. You know, my last question, because I can't believe we're almost out of time. My last question to you is, what advice would the Shahinas of today give the Shahinas of about 20 years ago or thereabouts?
That's, again, a very interesting question, Jane. Thank you very much. Because, like, when I hear this question, I'll be like, okay, 20 years ago, I'm 40, so 20 years ago is really the middle of my life. And when I think, I would want to say, oh, my God, that was a time when I was so out of place, I was so crazy. I want to really advise myself with all the things that I've learned these last 20 years. But then when I connect to my heart and to my intellect, I only have or see to just be, you know, and I would tell myself if I go back 20 years is live the same life, do the same things, the same experience as I was, because I am now, Shahinaz, of the 40 years, because I lived this life, because I was this person. So there's nothing to change. There's nothing to do differently, you know, like now that I embrace everything in my life and I see everything, all my challenges, all my, you know, hard moments, painful moments as blessings. So I would say just be, just experience, just live as all your experiences come.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That is so beautiful. You are such a fabulous example of everything that you talk about and this transformation that you know that you live and that you know in that you coach women about. So I cannot believe that we're already at the end of the show. And so I want to thank my fabulous guest, Shahinaz El-Hanawi, for being on the show today. This has been a special, special treat for me. I'm Jan Jaffe, and it's been my privilege to have been your host today. I'd love to hear from you and am offering our listeners a free 30-minute discovery and strategy session. So for more information, questions, or whatever, just please feel free to email me at info@forwardtosuccess.com. Now, you're invited to share any comments or feedback on our website, lifecoachradionetworks.com. And in addition to my solo interview show, I also host Think Tank, a roundtable discussion. So I would be delighted if you would join us for the next episode of Think Tank on July 27th at 12 noon Eastern. Shahinaz, would you care to share any closing thoughts, advice, comments, or contact information with our listening audience?
Yes, sure. I would love to. Just a few things. I would say, let's come together, women from East and the West, you know, to know each other. And maybe the 40 Journeys of Light would be an invitation that we connect, you know, getting in solidarity and, you know, knowing ourselves and knowing each other. And also working towards, you know, like working towards diffusing any misconceptions that we have of each other. We are all one, and we have, you know, lots of common things, and our main commonality is the light within us. Self-discovery is a journey, and living in awareness is the purpose. We need to be while doing, and being is the light. You need to be light while doing anything. I would say enjoy yourself company and listen to the voice of your soul, your life. Practice a ritual that you're comfortable with to get to know yourself more, like, you know, meditation, music, anything, but just, you know, having a common daily practice to help you go within yourself. Thank you.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's such great advice. Thank you so much, Shahinaz. And thank you for being on the show today. I have so enjoyed having you with us. It's really been such a treat. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want... Oh, thank you.